Carlo Broussard is going to be joining us here. In fact,
all right.
If you want to, we can go ahead and change lanes.
Yeah, he knows what a crawfish is.
Man, you're going to be playing.
And he don't crawfish. Do you know what I'm saying? Like crawfish away from the truth.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I made it funny. It's a good day today.
I want to be there for that crawfish boil with
you
Jeff
and
Cavins.
Jeff Cavins. Let me tell you, he can put away the crawfish too.
Yeah,
he really can.
Yeah. And he cooks a pretty mean gumbo.
Well, not according to John Fultz, but then, you know, they were competing against each other. So ask which one who won. And
there it is. And answers. Woo, there we are.
You're going to have to play some of that crawfish.
Absolutely.
Oh, that'll happen. It's happening.
Yeah.
It's happening, man. There'll be a Cajun throwdown, let me tell you. All right, Carlo Broussard joining us from San Diego, trying to colonize the Cajun culture out there. How's it going?
It's going all right, man. We're rocking it.
Catholic.com is where you can find Carlo. And man, it's always a treat to have you with us. And we look forward to you. Because you think that you're going to be home maybe during the Christmas holidays?
Yes, I'm actually coming into Lafayette. I'm going to be speaking at the cathedral in Lafayette December 16th, 17th, and 18th, doing a three-night mission on the Eucharist.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I'll be talking about sort of the biblical evidence for Jesus' teaching on the Eucharist, both in Bread of Life Discourse and the Last Supper, talking about the early church's belief on the Eucharist, starting with St. Paul in the New Testament and going through the early church fathers. And then the third night will be a talk on Eucharistic miracles.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, to see how we got some profound Eucharistic miracles in the history of the church, and even some fairly recent ones that are very, very persuasive.
Well, we're going to get the information, and Gabby will put it on our website, because we have a real nice
calendar. Yeah, just email
calendar.
It to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Sure thing, I will.
Hey, I got my purse, Carlo. I'm thinking I'm going to see you in December.
Yeah.
Hey, come on over, Stacy. We'd love to have you, sis.
Oh, man.
Sweet. Oh, man. Well, things going well for you. And what is your topic? Are we still talking about Mother Mary today?
Yeah. So we're going to wrap up our little series here on the Blessed Mother.
There's just so much to know.
You can't exhaust it,
right,
Jeff.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. How to talk to Protestants about Mary.
Yeah.
So I figured we'd wrap that up this week. And next week, we're scheduled to talk about my new book, Meeting the Protestant Challenge.
Oh.
So we're going to do a little introduction to my book next week.
Okay.
And then when I get back from Australia, we'll start a series where we go through the book chapter by chapter.
You are international, my friend.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of international now because I've gone to Canada.
But listen, you're going to be on the map when you go to Australia. That's what, like a 24-hour flight or something?
Yeah, that's right. That's the first time I get to cross the big sea there.
Oh, my word.
All righty. So how to talk to Protestants about Mary. What I thought I'd do today is share a couple of reasons, biblical reasons, why we should think that Mary is a perpetual virgin. Very often we're challenged by our Protestants with some passages that would seem to conflict with the Catholic understanding of Mary as a perpetual virgin, such as the Brothers of the Lord, or Joseph knew her not until she brought forth her firstborn son. But I want to save those challenges for when we get to them in my book, because I address those in my new book, Meeting the Protestant Challenge. But here, what we can do is share a couple of biblical reasons for Mary being a perpetual virgin. And the first very profound reason, I think, quite persuasive actually, is Jesus' act of giving Mary over into John's care in John 19:26 through 27. The fact that Jesus does this indicates that it's very likely the brothers of the Lord, as Matthew refers to them in Matthew 13:55, right? James, Joseph, Simon, and Jude, those guys, they're not biological brothers. Because in the Jewish culture, right, we know this for sure from Mark 7, that honoring your father and your mother and upholding that fourth commandment involved that the children care for the elderly parents, right?
Yeah.
And in Mark 7, Jesus hammers the Pharisees because they had this tradition of men that was nullifying that commandment of God and telling people, hey, if you the money that you have to care for your folks, you know, under the precept of the fourth commandment in order to abide by it, you give all that money to the temple as korban, which means offered to God, you're free of your obligation. And Jesus hammers them. Your traditions of men nullify the word of God, right? And he just puts it to them, man. So we know in Jesus' mind and in Jesus' God, it belongs to the fourth commandment. In Jesus' mind, for the children to care for their elderly parents, which was very, very crucial in the first century because of, you know, the hard times, the hardships that would be bestowed upon parents. If you had the mother who was a widow and with one of the elder sons dying, it would have been unthinkable for Jesus to entrust Mary into John's care, an outsider and not one of his biological brothers. That would have been an insult to his biological brothers, implying as if they were incapable and they didn't have the means to care for their elderly mother. That would have been an insult by Jesus. So it's likely, very reasonable to conclude that Jesus gives Mary over into the care of John upon his death indicates that those brothers of the Lord, James, Joseph, Simon, and Jude, they were not biological brothers, that Mary did not have other children besides Jesus.
Right.
And this is a line of argument that some of the early church fathers used as well, going all the way back to the 4th century with Saint Athanasius in his De Virginitate, and even St. Hilary of Poitiers in his commentary on the Gospel of Matthew. So that's one reason, a positive reason, you might say, because we're kind of on the offensive here, some positive evidence that Mary was a perpetual virgin. Now, another argument that we could employ in order to support Mary's perpetual virginity would be the Mary's question to the angel Gabriel in Luke chapter 1, verse 34. And y'all are familiar with the Annunciation, right? When the Gabriel comes to Mary and says, hey, Mary, you know, you're going to bear the Messiah, right? The Son of the living God, sit upon his throne of the father David for generation into generation. And Mary responds to that good news by asking the question, how shall this be? I know not man. Now, we know from the biblical, in the word knowledge is used in the Bible to connote sexual relationship, right? And so she's saying, I know not man, right?
Yeah.
Now, why would Mary ask that question, a question of how am I going to conceive a child? Why would she ask that question unless she has some sort of vow of perpetual virginity? And the reason why we say this is because Luke tells us in Luke 1:27, guys, that Mary was betrothed to Joseph. The Greek word there that's used means betrothal in the Jewish sense, which means they were married. Hmm. It's not an engagement like we get engaged here in 21st century America, right? In our culture. Mm-hmm. For the Jews to be betrothed was to be legally married.
Hmm.
Now, if Mary was planning on going through a regular marriage and the normal course of events, well, then it's natural that when you're betrothed, you're married, and Joseph is off preparing that place for his bride, that when he comes back and gets his bride, they're going to consummate that marriage and children are going to come forth, right? That's the normal course of events.
Sure.
So if Mary planned on going through those normal course of events, well, then there would be no need for her to ask the question to the angel Gabriel, how am I going to get a baby? How am I going to have a baby, right?
Carlo, we got that less than a minute.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. That question is unintelligible against the backdrop of Mary having intending to go through the normal course of events. The more reasonable explanation to make intelligible her question is that she had some sort of vow of perpetual virginity. And this is something that, you know, a line of reasoning that the Christians have been using throughout the centuries, and Catholics in particular, in order to show biblical evidence, a biblical witness, that Mary was a perpetual virgin, and that she even intended to be so even before before the Annunciation.
Wow.
Man. Yes, faith and reason right there coming from Carlo Broussard. Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah. You got to look at the evidence and then, you know, ask those questions. What is the best explanation here? Not this one, but this one.
All right, CarloBroussard.com. Also, how can folks get in touch with you? Because you're on Catholic.com as well.
Yeah, Catholic.com. And if they want to bring me out to speak at their parish, and in fact, to come and give a mission on the Eucharist, like I articulated earlier, they can go to CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com.
Oh, cool. Very good. Very good. Awesome. God bless you, my friend.
God bless you, Carlo.
Hey, God bless y'all. Y'all have a great day and enjoy the fall weather.
All right, you too.
Got that gumbo pot.
God bless you.